Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Milo, his dad put down the newspaper and looked at his 10-year-old son standing alone in the doorway. Why aren't you outside playing ball with your cousins? Milo looked down. I just don't feel like it, he mumbled. Hey, twerp, Milo's older brother Bill rounded the corner and tossed a basketball right into Milo's stomach. Milo blanched and let the ball drop to the floor. Why don't you use that backboard outside and learn to sink a few? He called over his shoulder as the kitchen door slammed behind him. Milo continued to stand in the doorway, one hand now over his aching middle. His dad heaved a sigh. You don't look so great, bud. Hey, how about a ferocious game of chess? Milo offered a weak smile. Okay. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about our highly sensitive sons? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has worked with many sensitive young people and adults over more than 25 years. Dr. Ted Zeff is author of several books about sensitivity, The Highly Sensitive Person's Survival Guide, The Highly Sensitive Person's Companion, and his latest, The Strong Sensitive Boy. He has more than 25 years of experience counseling sensitive children and adults and currently teaches workshops and consults internationally on coping strategies for highly sensitive children and adults. He's the father of a son and grandfather of two youngsters. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Zeff.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here today.
In Western culture, how would you define a sensitive male?
What's interesting is that until about 12, 13 years ago, no one even knew of the term of the trait of high sensitivity. And Elaine Aron coined the term. She's a research psychologist. And just by word of mouth, her book, The Highly Sensitive Person, has sold way over a million. It's close to 2 million now. It's absolutely amazing. And I know on myself, I get emails practically every week saying, thank you so much for writing the book. I thought there was always something wrong with me because my whole life people said, oh, I'm too sensitive. What's wrong with you? And 20% of the population, both equally male and female, have a finely tuned nervous system. Each person's different, but they may have a lot of difficulty with noise, strong smells, changes in their environment, violence, and they'll feel things deeper emotionally than a non-highly sensitive person.
Is this the kind of thing where they say that when babies are born, very shortly afterwards you can tell if they startle more easily or if their, you know, nervous system seems a little bit more sensitive?
Yes. You see, everybody is born differently, and we're not all the same. And many parents will notice of infants that some infants react deeper to stimulation. And what it is basically is being finely tuned to stimulation. And sensitive people have to really plan ahead to cope with overstimulation. And society nowadays, with all the electronics and the cell phones and the texting, and it's actually crazy now with so much stimulation in society, and this aggravates the nervous system, making it very difficult for someone who has a finely tuned nervous system.
So it's harder nowadays than it was 50 years ago.
Absolutely.
Could you mention some positive traits of a sensitive person?
Sure. Sensitive people tend to pause to reflect. And sensitive people are frequently some of the great poets, writers, musicians. They're more creative, generally, than the non-sensitive person. They're very conscientious. They make fantastic employees because sensitive people are very responsible. They feel things deeper. They tend to be very intuitive. They have deep spiritual experiences. So some sensitive people I'm thinking of is someone like President Abraham Lincoln, Amadeus Mozart, Gandhi. So some of the world's greatest leaders have been people with a finely tuned nervous system.
Why is it important at this point in the 21st century to differentiate between sensitive males and sensitive females?
It's much more difficult for a boy with a finely tuned nervous system than a girl, because especially in the United States, it's expected that girls can cry, express some fear, feel emotions deeper. But for boys, most boys are taught the boy code, which means you have to be tough, self-reliant, and never show any emotion. Matter of fact, there's one study I'd like to quote because, interestingly, one study showed infant boys are more emotionally reactive than infant girls, but by the time a boy is 4 or 5 years old, he's learned to repress every emotion except anger, because anger is one of the few expressions that boys are allowed to have. Because when boys show fear or they cry, parents or older brothers, like in this little story you just told, would just put them down, humiliate them, ostracize them. And so it's particularly hard for boys with a finely tuned nervous system because they have to repress their feelings that much more.
That's interesting that infant boys seem to be more prone to this. Why do you think that is? Just the wiring?
I think what was interesting, just to illustrate the fact that even if they were equal, this one study showed that infant boys are actually more reactive to stimulation. But I think the important point is to see, even if they were equal between infant girls and infant boys, the fact that what happens between an infant that's, you know, a few months old to a boy who reaches 4 or 5, they've learned to repress every emotion, because as soon as a boy cries, he's humiliated, he shows compassion. Come on, you have to be tough, you have to be rough, because showing emotions is considered a feminine quality. And one of the most humiliating things is for a boy to be thought feminine. So that we have a whole society, especially in America, where boys grow up feeling like they have to deny half of themselves, which is their emotional half. And because of that, you see a lot of the problems in the world where people want to attack first, be aggressive for their manhood. You see men who, as boys, learn to repress their emotions, they don't go to doctors. Oh, I could take care of myself. I don't need any help. And I was actually at the VA hospital recently, and I saw a wonderful sign that said, "It takes the strength of a warrior to ask for help." If you're having emotional problems like PTSD from being in Iraq or Afghanistan, come ask for help. But boys are told growing up, never ask for help, don't depend on anyone. And it's particularly more difficult in certain cultures like the United States.
What's the difference between a sensitive son's relationship with his mother and his relationship with his father?
You know, it all depends individually, because you can have a father who's very supportive of a sensitive son. Unfortunately, generally, the mother's more supportive. So, for example, I interviewed 30 men from 5 different countries, and 2 men from America, I just thought of these 2 guys I interviewed. One man, when he was a boy, had a passion for playing the flute, and his father put him down and said, "What's wrong with you? Boys don't play flutes." And he even realized later in retrospect that there's a whole hierarchy. Being in the band is a little bit more feminine than being on the football team. But then if you play the drums or trumpet, it's more okay for a boy than playing like a flute. So it's very strange. So his father put him down, but his mother supported him. But he wanted his father's approval. So what he did was he gave up his passion for playing the flute and went out for football. And he was a good athlete. He was okay. He didn't really like it that much, but he did it to get his father's approval. Every sensitive boy is different. This one man I interviewed, he enjoyed playing hockey, and he was a trial attorney. And I said, "Wow, that sounds like a rough job if you're sensitive, being an attorney dealing with, you know, all this combative behavior, a trial attorney." So he told me that his father was one of these fighters for the underdog. And one time in school, his teacher told him there was something wrong with him. He was too sensitive. And what's wrong with you? How come you're not playing on the playground with the other kids? You're just too sensitive. He told his father that, and his father came to the teacher and let that teacher have it under no uncertain terms. And this boy had such support from his father that he was one of the few men I interviewed from North America who had very high self-esteem, because self-esteem is related to how parents and teachers are treating sensitive children in this particular case.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on sensitive sons.
The popular book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Ted Zeff, about boys who are highly sensitive. How can sensitive boys improve on their peer interactions? You were talking about how lucky this child was to have his father, but most kids don't have anybody.
Exactly. And many sensitive children end up playing by themselves. See, generally, boys hang out in packs. And there's this kind of subculture among boys of insulting each other and being tough and, you know, being competitive and one-upping the other, while girls usually hang out in dyads or triads. And so it's really hard for a sensitive boy if he's in a neighborhood with a lot of tough guys who are trying to be very physical, because 90% of the men I interviewed and sensitive people in general don't like combative behavior, don't particularly like fighting. So it's really difficult for these boys if they're in a neighborhood with a lot of tough guys. So it's important for parents to find other children, get play dates for other children who are similar to their son, who might be more sensitive, might like to play, like in the story you said, a chess player rather than a football player. But again, every boy is different. I had men who loved to play ice hockey. I had men who liked to hunt, believe it or not, which was sounded really strange. But I think they really enjoyed it just to be alone in the wilderness. And the hunting was secondary. But they grew up in a culture where it was popular. It's not good for children, especially sensitive boys, to spend too much time alone. You have to have a balance. And so if a parent sees the child is spending too much time alone, reach out, look for other children who are sensitive, who you can get along with. So that's one perspective. Then I remember one man from Denmark I interviewed who said he used to just kind of be by himself a lot. And then when he was around teenagers, when he was getting interested in meeting girls and stuff in class, he felt like, oh, something was wrong with him, and he wanted to hang out with the guys who were the cool guys in school. This is even in Denmark. And he said it was a little rough at first hanging out with a bunch of more aggressive boys, but he said ultimately it was very good for him because he learned how to negotiate through the majority non-sensitive culture of males. So my feeling is, as long as a child isn't being humiliated and is being respected, it's fine for him to interact with boys who are more aggressive as long as they have common interests and they're respecting the boy. One of the most important things is parents, mothers and dads, should never, ever, ever let their child, especially a sensitive boy, be in a situation where he's humiliated. And you take him right out of that situation, and that's so crucial.
If you're looking for friends for a child that you feel has high sensitivity, is it a good idea to ask a teacher, or how do you go about finding other children?
Yeah, you could talk to the teacher in school explaining about your son is one of the 20%, one out of every five children in the classroom who are sensitive, and they do better with just even one supportive friend. All a child needs is one good friend. They don't need a whole big gang to feel part of. And matter of fact, even the man I interviewed who, when they were boys, were athletic and played on little league teams and things of that nature, they didn't really feel part of the boys. And as soon as the game was over, they wanted to leave. Even though they were accepted, they were good athletes, they didn't enjoy all that kind of rambunctious boy macho play, kind of one-upping each other and hitting each other all the time. Some of them do, but a lot of the men said when they were boys, they didn't.
Now, talking about talking with the teachers, what would you advocate for schools and teachers and other people who are in a school to do to help these kids?
So it's very difficult for any child to be in a large public school classroom. The fluorescent lights alone sometimes could be stimulating to a child. Noise, kids running around making noise, is very difficult. And a lot of times I'll get a question from a parent about, well, what's the difference between ADHD and a sensitive child? And the difference, this is really the key, is that when a child is in a classroom that's really noisy and there's a lot of stimulation, the child can't concentrate. It might look like the child has learning difficulties, but they don't, because that same child, if they're in a quiet environment at home doing homework, they can do fine. But a child with ADHD, even in a quiet setting, would have difficulty learning. So it's very important to talk to your child's teacher and explain in a non-confrontational manner that your child is part of the 20% of all children with a finely tuned nervous system. And you want to let the teacher know that there's special ways to treat a highly sensitive child. And I think I mentioned that sensitive children and sensitive people tend to be very creative, like Mozart, many of our writers, actors, poets. So you want to let the teacher know that having creative assignments for a sensitive child, the child will really do well. Let the teacher know that your son does not do well in an environment that there's too much stimulation. So an orderly classroom, a quiet classroom is very, very important. Don't pressure the sensitive child to join in when they're too early, because sensitive children are not risk takers. They like to pause to reflect, to observe the environment, then they'll join in at their own rate. But a lot of people have this misconception that all boys are rambunctious and are risk takers, and that's not true. So let the teacher know that your child likes to just check things out first for a while and tell the teacher the son has to go at his own rate. He does much better when he's not being closely observed. Sensitive people who have a teacher standing over their shoulder or a parent standing over their shoulder, they will have a really hard time and they won't be able to concentrate.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on sensitive sons. Parents' perspective needs you, your feedback, your opinions, and not least, your donations that help with the cost of producing this award-winning program.
Visit us online at www.parentsperspective.org and click on to Give Direct, I Give, or eBay at Mission Fish. Please help us continue to help you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Ted Zeff about boys who are highly sensitive.
Are there things that teachers can do right off the bat, besides obviously being warm and supportive, but maybe seating a sensitive child in a quieter part of the classroom, not in the center of the room, perhaps maybe on the side or
exactly.
toward the back or something?
Exactly. And changes are really hard for sensitive children. Some kids, they don't care what the change is, they'll just go with it. But sensitive children takes a while. So tell the teacher that if you're making changes, let's say in classroom assignments and seating, or you're going on a field trip, or there's a disruption in the school, let the sensitive child know in advance. The other thing that's so important is never discipline the sensitive child in a harsh manner, because sensitive children take in energy so deeply and can be just destroyed. And I remember actually one guy in particular I interviewed who was doing well in school until third grade. In third grade, he had a teacher who humiliated him because he wouldn't raise his hand because he was shy to answer, and she would purposely call on him and make him feel badly that he didn't participate like the other children. What's wrong with you? And from third grade on, he said his grades plummeted. That's why never allow a teacher to do that. So you have to let the teacher know that a sensitive child likes to pause and reflect and won't just jump in right away. If a parent sees that the teacher is not responsive to their child's needs in the classroom, you meet with the principal and or you pull the child out of that classroom. No child should be in a classroom where a teacher is humiliating them for their sensitivity, like this poor guy who, after this third grade teacher, he just got awful marks. It wasn't until later in life he realized what the problem was. So it's so important. The other thing that's important is, since sensitive children have such a difficulty with overstimulation, which the public classroom has, there's alternative schools like Montessori, Steiner, progressive private schools that tune into the child's unique creativity, that are quieter. And another option that I really like for some children, not for all children, is being homeschooled, depending where the child's living. And homeschooling can be a fantastic option for a sensitive child because they're in a quiet environment, they can do creative projects, they make their own schedule. But it's very important, if a child is being homeschooled, that the parent gets together with other parents of homeschooled children and do field trips, have them attend some kind of after-school program, or maybe in their own school district, there's some classes the child could get involved in. And one parent I remember interviewing whose child was homeschooled liked to play baseball. And so from an early age, after school, being homeschooled, he was shy at first, but then the parent let the coach know that it's, you know, he hasn't had a lot of experience interacting with other kids. And the child did really good and did well on the baseball team. So it's so important if your child is being homeschooled, which can be an excellent option, that they also make sure the child has enough socialization.
So in general, how can parents provide nurturing physical and emotional environments for their sensitive sons, assuming you are not homeschooling your child? I guess you really have to be on top of what's going on in that child's life when the child's not home.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important for parents to take a very proactive way of being in their child's life by sitting in on the classroom, really checking where the child's playing, where he's hanging out, what's happening. Because a lot of sensitive children, this is actually brings up the topic of bullying. A lot of sensitive children get bullied because bullies like to target children who are different. Many studies show that children with developmental disabilities or physical disabilities are much more teased and bullied than other children. Gay children that you probably heard about in the news, a lot of these gay young people have committed suicide for being bullied. And again, sensitive children seem a little different, and so they're a perfect target. And then they react deeply, so that only makes the bully want to tease them all that much more. So parents really have to find out what's going on. And actually, on my website, drtedzeff.com, D-R-T-E-D, Z as in zebra, E as in Edward, F as in Frank, F as in Frank.com, I have two excellent articles about how to prevent your sensitive son from being bullied and how to determine if your child is being bullied. So it's important for parents to know the signs of a child is being bullied and also what to do to prevent that.
This seems to me to make the case in a way for some kind of a mentoring system if your child is particularly interested in whatever it is, to find an adult who might be a good match. So there's somebody else in the world who cares and who can be supportive for this child.
It's very hard for the nuclear family with an isolated, you know, mom and dad alone to take all that responsibility. And I have a feeling one of the reasons why the sensitive boys growing up in countries like Thailand and India had an easier time because of the role of the extended family, living with grandparents, aunts, and uncles. And of course, some of it's cultural. I remember there was one study that was done that showed in China, the children who were the most sensitive were the most popular. In North America, the children who were the most sensitive were the least popular. So it really goes to show you it depends on the culture the child's being brought up in. But it's so important for children to have aunts, uncles, grandparents, neighbors who take an interest. Of course, in this day and age, you have to screen to make sure your child's with someone who's appropriate. But there's nothing like having other adults supporting your child, especially family members.
And sometimes it's helpful to find an outside person who's an expert in an area that your child has an interest in. For example, music composition or math or building models. A person who's not a family member, but who takes an interest in the child.
Absolutely. That is so important to have a highly sensitive son have at least one, if not more, adult mentors to encourage them, to support them. And it's unbelievable how one man told me that when he was growing up, his father was always busy traveling and didn't have time for him, and he had a very difficult situation with his mother. But he had an older neighbor friend who would take him out to show him how to play baseball, and that alone gave him the self-esteem to become athletic and have friends. So you can't ever underestimate, just even for a few months, a caring older person with a sensitive child. Because remember, sensitive children take in everything deeply, including the positive.
What's the prognosis for a sensitive boy as an adult?
Interestingly, research has shown that sensitive children who are totally supported at home and at school end up as adults at not only as well, but frequently even more well-adjusted than those who are non-highly sensitive. So I just find that interesting that there's nothing wrong with a child being sensitive as long as they have the unconditional support of their parents and peers and at school, that child grows into a fantastic, very well-adjusted adult.
Parents need to be on their toes and watch for the clues, don't they?
They absolutely have to watch for the clues.
Dr. Zeff, in addition to your book, The Strong Sensitive Boy, Help Your Son Become a Happy, Confident Man, what resources would you recommend for our listeners who want to explore further some of the issues we've been discussing?
Well, I suggest they go to my website, Dr. Ted Zeff, D-R-T-E-D, Z as in zebra, E as in Edward, double F as in Frank, .com. And I have a lot of tips how to cope, basically, as a sensitive person. Elaine Aaron wrote a book called The Highly Sensitive Child. That's an excellent book for parents of sensitive children. HSPerson.com is Elaine Aaron's website, and she, of course, is the founder who coined the whole subject, the highly sensitive person. So I highly recommend going to her site.
Well, this obviously has been a subject that's very important, and we are so grateful for Dr. Ted Zeff to have come and been with us today. So thank you so much for helping us to discover this very important subject.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to share this information with you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Zeff's book, The Strong Sensitive Boy, Help Your Son Become a Happy, Confident Man. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 488 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from you, our listeners. Thank you. Our sound engineer is Kent Hitchcock. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.